All lines are now bridged.
Great. Lauren, are you going to take this or do you want me to start?
I am so sorry about that. I was on mute. Thanks, everyone, for joining the call today. With us so far, we have Terry O'Malley, Tina Esposito, Sasha Termont, and hopefully the others will be joining here in a few. So, Terry, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. Well, thanks to our small but powerful crew. So today we just learned that our final transmission letter is due on 5/8 rather than after our 5/10 call. So what that means is that today we will go through the proposed transmittal letter and correct some of the slides, make sure the language syncs up, and then probably turn this around and send it out over the weekend for people's final comments so we can submit our letter on the 8th. So it's really a tight timeline. So that's the main news of the day. So what I hope we'll do on this call is actually go through each item for which there was no consensus based on the ballots, and see what we can do. And the idea will be to come to consensus, which doesn't mean unanimity. It means general agreement, because we'll probably never get to perfect. But if we can get to close enough and acceptable, then that's good enough. So unless you have a really strong allergic reaction to the item that's being proposed, vote yes, but otherwise vote no, and we'll discuss it, and you know, hopefully we'll be able to iron out any of our really serious objections during this call, because it's not so easy to iron them out when we're doing the presentation on 5/13. So hopefully we'll be able to square things up now. So, any questions, comments, or concerns?
No. Dive in.
You're in. Okay. All right. So, two buckets. The first one is pretty easy. Well, I hope it is. We'll see. It's sort of a general issue, and many people raised it, is do we want to, quote, recommend that ONC does XYZ, or do we want to ask ONC to consider XYZ? So that's the first vote. And several people have already suggested we make it recommend. So what do we think of that as our recommendation, that we change our text to read recommend rather than consider?
Is that about a specific item or universally?
Yeah, probably universally, unless it's something that we agree on that we either want to move or postpone, or it's just sort of a general, make it a recommendation, but we might recommend that ONC investigate rather than implement.
Right.
Something like that. So, but generally just ask them, make our recommendations as such and qualify them as we need to.
So I wonder, I'm fine with the recommendation where we've got a very clear understanding of here's the problem and here's what we think will help mitigate that. I wonder, though, and I recall thinking this as I was going down the spreadsheet, if there perhaps is an opportunity to use both when it's clear, like we're trying to solution, but in areas where maybe the problem isn't fully clear or it's going to take a little bit more thoughtful, you know, it's going to take a little bit more thinking or more time, maybe we use the term consider. And I guess I reflect back specifically to the quality measure item.
Yep.
That was sort of, you know, lower in on the recommendation. I don't know what line item it was, but in the, you know, 29 or something along those lines. And, you know, I think the intent is excellent. I think, though, the way in which we're trying to get at it may not be quite right. And so when we have an area like that where everyone's pretty much for the idea, but how and, you know, what we're recommending isn't quite clear, maybe that's more of a consideration for ONC.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, and that, I think that makes sense. And what we can do when we go through the items is assume we're going to make it a recommendation, but if you think it ought to be a consideration at that time, then just raise it and we'll figure it out. How's that?
I'm good with it.
Okay. Okay. So the next things we got to do is going to be, we'll just go over each of our recommendations where there's not a consensus. So there are fortunately about 30 elements where pretty much everyone voted yes or yes with minor word changing in the transmittal letter, most of which didn't alter the meaning but made it clearer. So the ones that we couldn't, I just sort of put down for discussion. So I think, Johnny, if you're on, it might be helpful to pull up the all ballot spreadsheet and go to the last column.
Yep, just give me one second.
Yep, and then we'll add another column after the last column for sort of our adjudication. And I meant to thank you guys really for all the work to get this done. This is really a short timeline. And
it's the version the, 5, right?
Version V4, I think. You have a V5?
Yeah, I have a V5. You sent it.
The one, Johnny, the one that I sent. Is Adam.
Oh, okay, got it. Yeah.
The version control happens everywhere. All right.
One second, I got it, pulling it up.
And what we'll do is we'll do real-time editing. Johnny will do real-time editing.
Is there a Google Doc where we should be following along with this, or just they'll pull it up on the Adobe Connect?
Yeah, it's just going to go up on Adobe Connect, although,
okay.
You know, although we, there's no reason why we couldn't send the file out. If that's easier. Yeah, I think that's actually going to be easier, unless we can get this really big.
Yeah, I mean, I can.
Well, actually, if you click on the, you know, the expand to full screen button,
mm-hmm.
the Adobe Connect, it actually is legible.
Mm-hmm.
So, Johnny, if you
okay.
go all the way to column. To the last column. Yeah, composite decisions. And let's add one more column after that. And that can be our adjudication. All right, and then we'll go. So I think, you know, unless someone's got a preference, we'll just kind of go down the list. And so the first one is on address. And the question was raised, sort of, how many addresses do we need? How far back should we go? And there were at least two schools of thought. One said, any address you can get will help you in patient matching. And the other ones were more parsimonious and said, just the last one. Your current and last. And I don't know what the right answer is, but... Do we have a group opinion?
So just to clarify, this is Session. I apologize if I ask questions that have already been discussed because I'm trying to make sure I get up to speed. This is for inclusion USCDI, so this doesn't have a data capture implication. It's simply about what should a software system that is certified to USCDI be able to support. as a floor.
Exactly. Right. Right. There are no solutions in this. This is just, we're saying this is a data element that USCDI should contain. ONC can decide whether they want to add this element or this clarification, and then in the two-year process make it part of certification.
Christina, I know I commented on this, and so here I'm going to, I have a little bit of experience in the identity sort of realm, and we have, you know, evolved immensely over the course of the past couple of years, but one of the areas that I think there's an opportunity for, and I think some have explored, is this notion of referential matching, where you're looking at a number of data elements from the history that help you sort of, you know, align and pull together a single identifier, a single patient, and ensure that all of that information is pulled together. And what has been sourced, or at least cited, that would support this effort would be to see all of the addresses, all of the historical demographic data of someone, because the challenge you have, let's say, as a hospital system is that you're not quite sure how old that piece of demographic data you have is. Is that two addresses ago, three addresses ago? Is it a current address? And so when you have that look back and can see, oh, this may not be the current address, but it was two addresses ago, must be the same based on everything else that matches. So I think, and I'm just throwing that out there, sort of that's kind of where my head was at when I read that. Pulling together then Sasha's comment on you know, what's kind of the need here, my recommendation would be that it should be able to contain more than just the current address if we want to enable referential matching. That's the business problem. How this, you know, what piece of that is this? That's where I'm getting a little lost. So I don't know how useful that was, but I just want to kind of give you my perspective of it as I was reviewing that.
Yeah, great. And anyone else want to weigh in?
I might favor actually just making this more generic to say multiple addresses. There could be cases where someone has two, you know, a vacation home or other reasons that they have multiple addresses on file, and you would want to use all available data to, I think it was Tina's point, that would improve matching. I don't want to imply that someone should back enter like their previous seven addresses just for the hope that it would improve matching, but if you have a lifetime record for a patient and you have previous seven addresses and one of them is helpful for matching, that sounds amazing.
Yep.
Maybe it's solved by simply saying that USCDI would, you know, imply support for multiple addresses per one patient and not be prescriptive.
Yeah, so we might say current address and previous addresses.
I would be very supportive of that. I agree.
Yeah, that's kind of what Clem said, the same thing. You know, if you already know some previous addresses, you can pull them forward. But if this is the first time you register, then you probably ought to see what you can do. Okay, are we okay with that one?
Yep.
Hearing no objections, the chair moves on. Okay.
Now, what do you want me to denote in adjudication, yes or no, or
well,
what would you like?
Yeah, no, put our verbiage,
mm-hmm.
And we'll assume that's a yes. And if it's not, we'll have enough verbiage in it to say there were two schools of thought and we couldn't come to consensus.
Mm-hmm.
How's that?
Does that look good?
Yeah, okay. All right, and then the next one was on standardized format and content for address. And there are, you know, a lot of comments regarding, yeah, so what standard are we going to use? And I basically just said, let ONC choose it. It's whatever one they think is the best at the time. And it might be the U.S. Postal Service or it might be something else. So how about that for a recommendation?
The challenge from my perspective is that...
Huh?
Oh, go ahead.
No, please.
So the way this is phrased, at least, and this is part of my confusion, which I think I said that, is that adopt a standardized format seems to imply that you would adopt it in certification, but the current address standard format that I understand, which is USPS, is not something you could test in certification. It's a way of formatting things in the same fields that anyone would have for address, like, you know, address row one, address row two, city, state, zip, et cetera. And yeah. So when I look at this and I'm thinking, again, this is going to be a USCDI thing, which would be tested on HIT modules through the certification process, you can't do that in the certification process. It could be encouraged, but that's really a data capture or data normalization step. It can't be something that's, like, certified against.
Gotcha. So how would – all right. I think I understand that. So would – how would you like to see it phrased that we might all
well,
agree on?
I guess if we're putting it here, I think we maybe need to just frame it as ONC should encourage the use of the USPS address format because we recognize that standardized address formats dramatically improves matching. If we really wanted, as an industry, to improve the standardization of address formats, the way that it would seem to do that would be to have healthcare systems connect up to an address verification API. There are some available today commercially. The restriction from wider use, as I understand it, is cost. USPS has one available that I don't think they license for the purpose of, like, healthcare matching. And so, and you know, that's not really a USCDI thing. That's like a separate standards thing outside of this, maybe something to punt over to the standards priorities task force. But so I guess from a USCDI perspective, I feel like all that could be done would be to say that we recognize the importance of a standardized format and encourage it. From a how would we get there, I think the way to get there would be to ensure that there is address verification web services available at a cost that makes it practical for widespread adoption across the industry. And then that, you know, healthcare organizations would adopt those.
Okay. I think, all right, so let's sort of, any other comments on sort of the first half of this? Because I think the second half gets a little out of our scope. I don't think we're going to propose how any of this gets done so much as what it is we want. What it is we want ONC to include in USCDI. So we want them to include addresses in a standardized format and encourage that. But probably beyond that, I'm not sure we need to make any further recommendation. Does that make sense?
I'm okay. I'm good. This is Tina.
Okay, so.
Can we take this first sentence of the comments as the adjudication?
Yes, I think so. It just got into another.
Yep. Okay, that makes sense.
So we'll move, right, we'll move that one over, and we'll make that as an additional.
And just for the adjudication comments, I don't think it's actually a question of vendor adoption as it is a question of healthcare system adoption.
Okay. All right. Great. All right. Then we had homelessness, and I think the comments kind of fell into two buckets. One is, first of all, should it be in demographics at all? And then the second one is, should it be in a later version? And I think the consensus was it probably shouldn't be in demographics because it's, although helpful, it's not a concept that fits neatly in demographics. And because it's a concept that doesn't fit neatly and it's yet to be fully standardized, whether we ought to postpone this to a later version. and make that our recommendation. So the summary recommendation I would make is we take homelessness, move it to miscellaneous, and encourage ONC or somebody to consider it for a later version. So let me make that as a proposal, and if any of you guys think, you know, no, homelessness ought to be on the ballot right now, you know, it ought to stay in demographics.
I support your proposal. I think it aligns with my feedback, which was that I wasn't sure that the standards supported this designation for matching today, and so it didn't really align with demographics or the sort of version one, since I think standards work would be appropriate first.
Okay.
I would also support, I think, and I think I made a reference to this in my comments, I think the challenge with this one is not that there's no field, but rather how is it that you script the conversation to actually collect that information?
Yeah.
And I think right now you can pull this. It's not very well, I'm sure, documented or leveraged, but I think that is not a system issue or a field issue. It's far beyond that.
Okay. All right. So our adjudication is that we move it to miscellaneous and make it a future version. Is that okay?
Fine.
Okay. Moving right along. We will recommend, so the next one with a yes was an international address. All we're doing is explore. So, you know, that's no stronger than consider, I think. So, and then we all agreed that phone numbers were a good thing to have. And the general consensus was that we include both mobile and landline. The question was, you know, do we need to make one primary and the other secondary, or does it just say collect all the phone numbers you can? So
from a personal perspective, people will ask for like a landline phone number, and I put my mobile in because I don't have a landline, and I think that's common. So yeah. I have a sense that when recording data, the distinction between landline and mobile is not super valuable to start with. What we've found in matching using phone numbers is that if you simply cross-match against all available phone numbers, the rates go way up without trying to differentiate matching what was recorded in one system as a landline with what was recorded in another system as a landline. Just say, like, do any of the phone numbers in that system match any of the phone numbers in this system? So I would favor saying collect as many phone numbers as you have, try to match against all of them.
I would agree to that, and the mobile one is an important one from a matching perspective because it just changes less, tends to follow a person.
Very
so,
reliable.
Much more reliable.
Okay. So our adjudication would be that we collect any available phone numbers?
This is for 2A, right?
2A, correct. I mean, so, you know,
yes,
if you're
that
not,
would be the adjudication.
Yeah, okay. So, right, okay.
Or just for, like, precision in wording, I think what we would say is that software should support, like we said with addresses, multiple phone numbers.
Okay.
Again, we're not in a position to tell what should be collected or who would record what or any of that.
Right. Okay. So we're recommending that software should support multiple phone numbers. Okay. Good. ONC shouldn't consider that. You should take it as a recommendation. Okay. All right. Okay. So the next one was sort of include a designation indicating whether the phone number belonged to the patient or to someone else. And, you know, Brent said, is this going to be an opportunity to mismatch? Stephen Lane said, should you change the number to each number? So I think the point on this one was primarily initially brought up to establish some privacy for adolescents who may or may not want to share, give their parents' phone number for health information that they want to keep private. It's a real sticky.
I wonder if we should generalize. I mean, there's other situations where you would want to know whether, you know, a husband and wife were sharing a number or was individualized. To just designations of private versus shared numbers?
Excellent.
That's a good point.
That simplifies it dramatically.
And then I think that I, again, would want to avoid the implication that you would have to capture that for every phone number you ever enter in the system, but that if software supported the ability to say that a particular number was private or that a particular number was shared, then you could make decisions correspondingly about if you would use that for communication.
Yeah, that sounds great. So our adjudication would be software should support the designation of private or shared for phone numbers. Is that okay?
That works.
Yeah, I like that. That simplifies it a great deal. Oh, wonderful. Okay. And how does data elements destination for electronic communication? So this one, the comments were sort of, well, what can be destinations? You know, what sort of, is it as simple as just an email address or email addresses?
I think I read some of the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a variety of examples given of destinations, which included like a web address for a PHR, a direct address, an email address, and the challenging part from incorporating this into an EHR perspective is that each of those are very different. How you would want to store and use each of those addresses needs to be distinguished. They're not like interchangeable if you want them to be actionable. In my experience, the use of web addresses for a PHR or direct addresses among patients is very low. So I think the primary value from this one, in my mind, would be an email address. And so I would start there if we're making a recommendation to add things to USCDI version 1.
Yep.
I was along the same lines. I had to look to the narrative, and I was like, wow, I just feel like we could have simplified what we're asking here. Because it wasn't clear when I read it initially in terms of the element, if you will. So I would agree. I think I would simplify it and say it's an email address that we're after here, and then consider some of those other items that you just, in addition to the email address, there were a couple of other examples. I think those would be considerations or for future releases or future versions.
Okay. So our adjudication would be software should support collecting email addresses. And ONC should give consideration to other potential addresses in subsequent versions.
Makes sense.
Good. That gets us one step forward and kind of our foot in the door for the next version. Okay, great. And the next one, number 4, just I think evoked a lot of confusion. And I'm wondering if, since we simplified 3, my recommendation would be that we just drop 4.
That makes sense.
I would support that as well.
Okay. So drop it. Okay. Yeah, and again, later versions, you know, once you're collecting more than one address, then you can ask people to designate their preference. But if you're only getting one, That's the one. Okay. So this one, the designation of individuals with authority to consent to treatment and data use. The discussions were mainly around sort of what's already in the standards. You know, what's HL7 saying? What's FHIR? You know, what's HL7, either CCDA or FHIR saying? And you know, I think that's a choice that ONC can make. I would say that the general recommendation was everyone liked this one and thought it should stay as is.
This is just a name, right?
Just a name, right.
When we say designation of the individual, we're basically meaning there would be a name?
That was my comment. We have to be a little bit clear. What do we mean? Is that a relationship? Is that a name?
I think what it means is, I'll ask you guys, is there a standardized identity data set? So the individual, what do you want to know? You know, name, date of birth, contact information, address. I think whenever we ask for someone's identity, we probably ought to be asking close to the same thing. We're asking, how do we get in contact with this person? What do we need to know to be able to reach the person who's got authority to consent?
Yeah, that makes sense. We really want maybe a name and contact information. And for use, I mean, practically, you'd probably want to kind of know a relationship, too. This is a parent, a guardian, a friend, relative, spouse.
All right. So should we say software should support collection of the identity of the individual, blah, 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 who can consent, comma, including name, contact information, and relationship.
That clarifies. That's better.
Okay. Man, I wish we got this group together a long time ago. This is much better. Okay.
Were there any more fields you wanted to include there? Name, contact, relationship.
Contact information.
Yeah, contact information.
Do you want me to put et cetera? Or,
no.
Good
that's
start.
Too imprecise.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. Old center wrap text. Okay. All right. So the last four digits of Social Security. So two groups. One, it's helpful. The other, this is an identity theft issue.
So I commented on this. First of all, it's helpful, positively, absolutely, to include. I could just tell you from experience, though, that has raised lots of concern for various, even as simple as a survey where you need a password that would be specific to the team member or the associate. It tends to raise a lot of concerns when you leverage even the last four digits for Social Security number. So I think it's helpful for matching. There's no around that at all, but I do think this needs to be considered.
Okay. So how about if our adjudication is that we ask ONC to consider including the last four digits of the Social Security number.
That I wholeheartedly agree that any amount of the Social Security number is useful for matching. The language of a designation for the last four digits puzzled me because I was just assuming it would be four numbers, but I think that was correct in the letter, but then in B15, it was just, I was like, what would be a designation for the last four digits of the
school? Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, right. And then I looked at the letter, and I think the letter had clearer wording where it was just like the last four digits of the Social Security number. I was like, okay, yeah, that's...
That's right. Okay. That should be corrected. I didn't even notice that.
We could put something into the adjudication about the pros and cons, right? Like the recognition that it's enormously helpful for matching, but that we're sensitive to the privacy concerns.
Yep. I think that's nicely worded.
Okay. So Johnny, that goes into the adjudication comments.
What was that? Sorry, I missed it. I was trying to reword the adjudication.
I was just saying we recognize it's useful for matching, but we want to be sensitive to the privacy concerns.
Okay. And I think what we'll do on the adjudication comments is we'll put them into the transmittal letter as sort of a next paragraph after each of these as needed. But we may have to rework some of them, but is that okay with everyone? Do we do it that way?
Seems like good context, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Optional identifiers. So, again, about designations, right? Again, for patient matching, you know, any number is a good number, I think. So what we're trying to get with this was, first of all, it's optional for the patient to provide it. We're not going to drag it out of them if they don't want to give it. But if they are willing to give it, shouldn't we be able to collect it?
I think that makes sense, Terry, and philosophically I'm with you. I mean, but all of these are optional for the patient because our work group has no authority to influence data capture.
Correct.
So I guess thinking from a, if we recommended that this be in USCDI, what does that mean for ONC writing a certification requirement? They would say, okay, well, how would you include optional identifiers like state or federal government IDs? I guess thinking that through, like, unless there's a list of IDs that we would want to be supported, like, you know, passport numbers should be in this format and they would go in a field, and state issued IDs, if there's some sort of consistent format or a format per state or something, and those would go in this field, I imagine we would just have to have a more generic framework or something. I guess the ambiguity to all of that gives me a little bit of pause, not because I disagree with the assertion that they're useful for matching. They're certainly useful for matching. Our system uses any identifiers that are available in matching. But when we think about translating this recommendation into a USCDI certification requirement, it seems almost too open-ended.
So I recall the conversation, some of the research that's been done. I think driver's license or state ID, whichever, I guess interchangeable, was the number that has been most beneficial or very useful for the perspective of matching. So, Sasha, if I'm understanding, you're saying this is good, but clarify what ID specifically are you after here?
I think if we're going to make a recommendation for USCDI, we have to be specific about what additional identifiers we would want this software to support.
Okay.
So if we said, you know, another software should support the use of a state driver's license for the purposes of improving patient match rates, I think that's more clear.
Yeah.
And maybe we also say, because passport is such a standard, although not widely available, if we added that as a separate recommendation. So we recommend adding state license and ID, and we recommend adding passport. And we just...
Kind of leave it at that.
And leave it at that.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Have this other stuff wait for the next version. If someone says, you know, the military ID is really essential, then fine. get in line.
Okay. I would even prioritize driver's license ahead of passports from like an adoption perspective if we're drawing a narrower line, but
I would agree. I mean, it's definitely, I think, also much more common. You're much more likely to have your driver's license on you.
Right. I don't take my passport to the doctor.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if I can help it. But maybe we, again, I was thinking of making this two, so 7A and B, which don't exist, or whatever this was, make it two. Make the first recommendation that it's a state ID or driver's license. And the second recommendation is passport. Now, again, people are going to be, you know, online registration is going to be more common. People will be doing it from home.
Yeah. I think personally do 7B as a consider for the future and 7A as a we recommend system should support it. But I can live with either.
Yeah, same.
Okay.
I guess my mind went to more sort of global healthcare needs because then we get into this U.S. passport. I feel like I'm all for the driver's license. Well,
okay.
You know, I'm all in. On the passport, I think there still probably needs to be a little bit of conversation around it.
Okay, so let's make 7B in a future version. And if ONC wants to move it up, they can move it up. Okay. All right, so moving right along. Self-reported gender identity. Basically, two comments. One, it doesn't belong here. And the second is, do you want it, is it a high enough priority to keep it in V1? And I know Stephen Lane is a big advocate of this because Sutter has actually made it, put it right prominently in their demographic field. And then the third question was, so, don't you need sex assigned at birth as another field, which may drive preventive health interventions, where the gender identity will drive management decisions?
I think there's actually a fairly robust set of recommendations on how to collect gender identity and like organ inventory, and it's a quite complicated set of rules to know when you should be using each of those fields within an electronic health record. All of that seems to me to be beyond the scope of this. I think it's reasonable to use the standards in the interoperability standards advisory to collect gender identity, though I guess I don't know if it's appropriate to do in demographics or elsewhere. I would defer to others on that.
Yeah.
I was comfortable with it. I do think from a health, I'm going to speak from a health system perspective, from a health equity perspective, I think it's an important thing to understand and be able to look at from a public health perspective and that from that sense. But for folks that didn't think it belonged in the demographic section, what was the recommendation? Where should it be?
Miscellaneous.
I think it's definitely demographic. My opinion is I think it's demographic.
Okay. So are we all comfortable living with that? Because so our adjudication is that we recommend that software supports the collection of gender self-reported gender identity.
Is gender identity ever not self-reported? I thought it always was self-reported.
Well, that's true.
Since gender identity by definition was sort of... Anyway,
yeah.
It seems duplicative to me to say it's self-reported, but I am fine with the idea is although, to capture it.
Although somebody else might assign a different gender identity looking at somebody across the counter.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna suggest too. I think it just maybe underlines that it's self-identity and not necessarily something that someone enters or assumes.
Yeah, so I put self-reported back in there. That's good. Yeah, I think that's the, I mean, that's all our training films go over that point. So, anyway.
Yeah, and I think it makes sense. This is Al. It just makes sense to, it's primarily, I think, is a distinguish between that long phrase, sex assigned at birth, which is what we used to call sex, and this is gender identity, which, you know, just to distinguish between that, because, you know, just saying self-reported gender identity versus sex assigned, I think that's probably the reason that they use the long phrase.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Thank you. All right. So that's demographics. Chunk that one up. Good. So now we're on to provenance. And the ONC proposals, everyone thought were fine. There's no one that thought that the author's organization, author, and author's timestamp were inappropriate for provenance. So the discussion came more about the details that we put underneath each one. Although there was pretty good agreement, at least on the, as you can see where all the yeses are, people were pretty comfortable with only using it when author, when it's unambiguous. And the question was, what do you mean by unambiguous? Which is a good question. But, and I'm thinking ONC has to sort out what unambiguous is, because they're going to have to put limits around it. I don't think my vote as a task force member is to say, we think this is important, it ought to be unambiguous, and let ONC figure out what that means.
I think the tricky part from my perspective is, are we saying that there would be certain data classes where the author would always be ambiguous? Or are we saying that on a case-by-case basis, I would say, oh, well, sometimes within the allergies data class, the author is ambiguous, and sometimes it's straightforward, because then I don't understand how that would be operationalized.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it almost has to be by data class.
I would agree. I would support being more prescriptive, and I know that's maybe a little bit different than your proposal, Terry, of let ONC sort it out, but I would say that ONC should identify that in the cases of maybe notes and medications.
Yeah.
It is both important from a clinical perspective and more feasible to identify an unambiguous specific person as an author or group of people. There could be multiple people collaborating on a note, or one person who places a med and another person who modifies it or refills it. But that we should figure those out, and that in other data classes, we're proposing to simply use an organization. And even within organization, I do think there will be cases where it is ambiguous which organization a particular action is associated with. I work a lot on quality reporting, and one of the most enormously thorny problems with quality reporting is, how do you associate a particular action with an entity? And so I can anticipate that in this case, too, there might be some cases where it's very straightforward that Clinic A is responsible for a particular allergy data class, but that it might be other cases where it's ambiguous whether the entry of that allergy was an action attributable to Clinic A or Clinic B or the hospital in that group.
Right, okay. So how about if our adjudication is we recommend that ONC so the ONC, what do we want them to do? We want them to
maybe identify certain data classes where knowing the specific author is feasible and important?
Yeah, that sounds good. In particular, medications and notes.
Yeah, or for example, medications and notes, since those are the examples we've been using.
Yep. E.g., yeah. Okay.
And I guess even within medications, I think the author is quite straightforward when you have a prescription with someone who signs it, and way less straightforward to have an author when the patient comes in and says, oh, yeah, I take aspirin every day.
Yeah, so maybe we say for notes and for medication prescriptions.
Yeah.
And just make it really, really narrow, and we can get, again, it's going to be a V2. VN.
Right.
Okay, we're okay with that?
Good.
Okay, so 10B is really sort of the flip side of this. It's just essentially we're saying in all other cases, use author's organization for all their data classes. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think instead of the ambiguous language, we would maybe want to say for other data classes.
Yep. Use author's organization.
Yep. Right. Yeah, that works.
Yep. So we'll take out the ambiguous stuff and unambiguous, and we'll just say, do it here, and do this there. Whether you think it's ambiguous or not, we don't care.
Right, the ambiguousness is sort of by our background, but not a good definition.
Yeah, it's terrible. Okay, good. Much better. Okay, then author's timestamp was fine. So we should just change in 11A and 11B, just drop the same verbiage that just says use author's timestamp for medication prescriptions and notes and use author's organization for all other data classes.
What's the timestamp of author's organization?
Yeah, so that's the other thing. That gets to 11C. So what's the definition for timestamp?
Yeah, I guess I'm uncomfortable agreeing with 11B pending what 11C is. Realistically, even with an author, I'm not sure that we can have an author's timestamp like the text proposed. I think we almost have to say that this is the data entry timestamp.
Okay. Is that okay with everyone else?
Fine.
Yeah.
Or punt it to an implementation guide or something to define more clearly.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm in favor of limiting it. I think the comments that you guys are making are really helpful because I think we're focusing in on what it is we want done, and I think constraining each of these items is probably a good idea. So maybe we just say that we, you know, for author's timestamp and we use the same timestamp for author and organization, and that is, you know, blah, blah, blah. The time in which, you know, the data element is available for use by someone other than the author. I mean, that's kind of what we had in the transmittal letter. And then we just have one timestamp. Essentially, it's the organization's timestamp.
I'm really uncomfortable with that definition because I don't know that that's always measured.
Okay, so we just say use a single definition for timestamp for both author and organization and punt the definition.
Yeah.
Just say, and then we won't specify. Or we can
or
say
we almost
next.
Want to edit 11 more simply to just say that we would amend author's timestamp to data entry timestamp or just timestamp generically, noting that it needs definition.
So should we reject author's timestamp and just say in its place substitute? Well, but again, we're going to have times when we know the author. But we'll still use the organization's timestamp, wouldn't we?
I'm actually almost in favor of punting this to a definition guide because I feel like this could be something that, you know, first available, earliest available time. This is a challenge, I think, because depending upon the use case, it may vary.
I mean, if I just think through a few of the data classes, right, let's say patient's date of birth. What's the relevant timestamp for that?
Yeah.
When it
right.
happened? I mean, that's kind of stupid, but when it was entered into the system, do we even care about when it was entered into the system?
Yeah.
If there was a typo and it was edited, then do we care? I guess, and so I struggle, or then you think vitals. Someone has a vitals monitor hooked up to a patient in the hospital. There's maybe some sort of lag between when the vital is measured and when it gets through the wires into the EHR. Do we care about the measurement time, which is probably what's recorded in the EHR since that's more clinically pertinent, or do we care about like the time that it was available for others in the system, which is, you know, several seconds later? And so I just, when I think through specific examples, this gets so enormously complicated, and I don't think the complexity of that is merited. so maybe I'm with you, Tina. Maybe we need to punt this separately, or just say timestamp and let each implementer figure it out a little bit because it doesn't super matter, except I guess I kind of don't even think it's worth capturing for things like date of birth.
No, right. There might be a lot. And again, remember, this is for provenance. So
yes, but every data class has provenance associated with it.
Right, but the provenance in I kind of look at provenance as being a local phenomenon. So it's what we're asking is that the system that generates this data element is able to identify it and assert its provenance. I don't care how they do it. You know, they may use Roman, but it's really, if I went to that organization and I said, tell me about this data element, when and where did it come from? However they do that is fine with me. I don't care. As long as they do it uniquely.
So then I think what we're saying is we're not going to define timestamp. We would take out maybe author's timestamp because we've lost the concept of author, and so that's not super meaningful, and instead just say accept timestamp as a proposed data element with the expectation that each system would have to apply timestamps.
Yep. Yeah, that simplifies it. So we were going to say, okay. So I think the adjudication, Johnny, is amend author's timestamp to refer only to change author's timestamp to timestamp. In a sense, to be defined by the by each system.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or locally implemented or something.
Yeah, okay. Or locally, it should be locally implemented. Okay, that's great. Yeah, because it, you know, we don't care how they put the stamp on it. We just want to know that they can use it to establish provenance.
And maybe, Terry, kind of that sentence I would tee up as sort of the intro to this recommendation. Because I do think this is an area that gets a little bit, it's hard to step back. I mean, the intent of this is provenance, and I think just saying that up front I think is helpful.
Okay, so make that a lead in to the entire section?
Well, particularly around the timestamp, like just acknowledging that this is not
okay.
intended to be anything more than just, you know, verifying the information.
Okay. So, Johnny, you want to add that to adjudication comments for timestamp?
That was just to start the this section with.
Well, in this, in the adjudication comments, add to adjudication comments the fact that timestamp is only to assist provenance and is locally implemented.
At least in version one.
In version one, right. Okay. Okay. Right, we're going to, right, so we're going to get rid of 11A. I think you're right, Johnny. Right, we don't care anymore about author's timestamp or organization. We're just timestamp.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we don't care about all that other stuff. Okay. That makes sense? Drop, drop, drop.
Yep.
Okay. Great. All right. So this one is sort of, depending on whether knowing the organization is going to be important to establish provenance, if that's the case, then you need a unique organization identity. That logic is correct.
Would this be like a HL7 OID?
OID.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I guess the sub question is there already an existing taxonomy that we can use? So is it an HL7 OID? Does it already exist in a way that is broadly applicable to things other than medical providers? You know, medical broadly, when, you know, like my big concern is does it extend to non-medical providers of support services, which are essential to the care of my patients?
Well, for a lot of HL7 based exchange, the organizational identifier, as I understand it, uses the OID registry that HL7 has. But I might need to do more research with colleagues if we have more questions about that. It's not my area of expertise.
And if I recall, I think what was being proposed as part of this conversation was just that there are identifiers that exist for hospitals and providers, but that may not be the case for other examples. I know off the top of my head, I don't recall if that, you know, because we were saying nursing homes would be included. So I think the identifier is important, and I was supportive of it. I think what I read in the comments, though, or some of the feedback, was that there were examples where there was no identifier or no standard identifier that could be leveraged.
Yeah. The other challenge that was that, in my mind, some of the identifiers that were listed as examples, NPI, tax ID, et cetera, are not necessarily practical to match to the actions that we're talking about above. If, you know, hundreds of NPIs, thousands of NPIs, and dozens of tax IDs are all part of one system, you are back to the same ambiguity about how do you associate the right one with the data allergies, data class for allergies updates?
Okay. So how about if we make our adjudication that we just take it as it's written, add as data element a unique organization identity, and leave it at that, and let ONC figure out what's the best way to do it.
What's the best one at this point, yeah.
Yeah, because it's
given
clear.
The uncertainty, should we make it a recommendation or a consider for the future? I would vote consider.
Yeah,
I would say consider as long as we're not, I wonder, are we overthinking it? You know, is there at least a starting point? So I think I would consider whether there's enough, whether there's a number out there that's leveraged enough that this would not be as complicated, but if there isn't, then yeah, I mean, I would say move it to version 2 or 3. I mean, if the majority of elements that are being transmitted or passed, you know, do have some sort of identifying number that currently is in use and exists, then we should absolutely leverage it.
Well, that would still be possible with a consider. I guess the consider just sort of reflects our lack of certainty rather than a recommendation where we had a higher degree of confidence in the readiness of the solution.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay, so consider adding a unique organization identity and implement in V1 if they have a good candidate. I don't know.
Yeah.
And we don't have to say what they can do in version 2. That's where it's going to go if it doesn't go in 1. Okay. And then this is another sort of the same thing, tricky one. And the only solution for, since the United States Congress has declared that the U.S. government is not going to spend any money on a national patient identifier, and no one can use government-supported money to do it, then, you know, the only alternative to that I can think of is merged enterprise patient registries. You know, so Partners Healthcare has one, you know, Sutter has one, Mayo, you know. So there are a lot of large enterprises that have master patient indexes, and, you know, the question is, can we leverage those? It won't get everybody, but it'll get somebody.
So, Terry, you're referring, like, so Advocate Aurora has an enterprise master patient index that pulls together, you know, data for a patient across sort of disparate systems and claims data, et cetera. You're saying to leverage that ID?
Yeah, leverage it just as a possible alternative to nothing.
How would that be useful for someplace else, right? Like,
right.
If that's only a local solution, right?
Right. But you know, so I look at it as ultimately it's kind of like the HIE exchange network. Starts off local, then it gets regional, then it gets, you know, national. But just as a starting point.
I would say it would be more useful, and this is a little bit of a different approach, but to have a standard way to designate not the identity of the patient, but just that this was, since we're talking about things that are recorded in the context of a patient record, that it was patient reported. And so that's not like the identifier of the patient, but it is in the context of the patient's chart useful to say, oh, well, the fact that this patient said they were taking aspirin was patient reported, so then I know that reporter of that was the person whose chart it is.
Interesting. Yeah, that's actually a great clarification. I like that.
And that doesn't that doesn't provide an identifier across systems, but if you get a chart from another place and you see that med was patient reported, you know that was the owner of, you know, the patient in the chart that reported it, so it's still useful.
So
now, that said, I don't know if the standards support that today, so this might be one of those ONC should consider, you know, encouraging standards to do that, but.
Yeah, I think we can recommend it, and, you know, and if ONC likes it, they'll find a standard, and if they can't find a standard, they'll lean on HL7 to come up with it, or somebody. So I like that approach. So our adjudication would be add as a data element, a designation of when the data is patient generated.
So just another question. Is this really a data element, or is this an author of a standard way to say this was self-reported? patient reported, because it would not necessarily need a separate data element so much as it would need that the author element about that particular thing would be patient.
Okay. You're doing great on phrasing. How would you like to phrase that one?
I wonder, okay, so I would say recommend ONC develop a method to standardly indicate when the author of patient-reported data is the patient.
Is that okay?
Well, the author of patient-reported data is the patient, or do we have a...
Or I guess what we're really saying is that when patient-reported data, when you have patient-reported data, just record the author as patient.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just say that.
So that was more straightforward.
No, Johnny, you're getting too far. So we just want to indicate have the software be able to indicate when the patient is the author of the data.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's much clearer. All right. I think those are the hardest ones. Clinical notes was, generally everyone was fine with everything that ONC proposed. And then with our one limitation, we just said laboratory narrative. We just want to make sure people don't use it as an excuse to just dump a text blob.
Agree it would be bad to dump text blobs into them, but again, this isn't about usage. This is about certification requirements for HIT systems, and I don't know how you would write that into a certification requirement.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I don't know how you do it either. So should this one be, we accept laboratory narrative, and we encourage ONC to advise that this only be used for narrative and not for discrete elements?
I actually, in conversations with my colleagues here who are more expert in CCDA templates and lab data formats than I am, their feeling was that the lab results data class of USCDI and this proposed notes data class were duplicative, and that it was more appropriate to include in the labs data class narratives when that is the information that is available about the result, either the entirety of it or some narrative content in addition to a structured result, and that it was therefore duplicative to have it as a note and less relevant to have it as a note because it's already included in the more structured labs data class. So I would actually favor not accepting the laboratory narrative as a proposed data element, feeling that it more appropriately belongs in the labs data class.
Okay. So I think we're getting a hint here. All right. So Lauren, would you like to ask for public comment?
Sure. And operator, can we open the public line?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And any comments in the queue?
There are no comments in the queue at this time.
Okay. We'll check that in a few minutes. Carrie?
Right. Let's go back to where we were. Thank you. And so our adjudication is not to accept the laboratory narrative note, but rather make the narrative part of the lab module.
Well, in our mind, the laboratory narrative was actually already part of the laboratory results data class.
Okay. So let's just say, so the adjudication is not to accept it.
It's duplicative.
Because it's duplicative and the narrative is already part of the results data class. Okay. Good.
We had the same feeling about one of the other ones. I think it was diagnostics, where, again, we felt like it was already part of a different data class.
Donna, can you blow your slide up, your screen up? It's all real small, at least on my.
You want me to zoom in, you said?
Yeah, if you can somehow that's getting better. Okay. So let's see if I can blow it up. Okay, good. No, back again. Thank you. Just makes it easier to read. Okay.
We said that about laboratory report narratives and pathology report narratives, which were both two note classes, which we thought more appropriately belonged within labs.
Okay. So let's go back up to 18 or 17 or 16. So right, 15. All right. So what we'll do, no, six, let's go to 14. So we're going to change this. We're not going to accept all clinical notes. We're going to accept the following clinical notes, and we'll list them out, and then we'll say we don't want laboratory narrative because it's duplicative, already included in results, and we don't want the pathology narrative because it's duplicative and already in notes.
The other one I'll call out is that imaging narrative is probably duplicative of what's coming in a future version, which is the diagnostic imaging reports, which is sort of forecast for USCDI V3 in the draft thing. And so if we put imaging notes or imaging narratives in now, we'd want to take it out later in V3 when diagnostic imaging reports is added as a data class. Alternatively, my suggestion would be take it out of notes and just add diagnostic imaging reports, which I see as quite well adopted, into V1.
Okay. I like that. So we'll, all right, so does that, so far, is our adjudication correct? We're going to, no laboratory, no pathology, and no imaging.
Correct.
For it. And we'll make another recommendation that diagnostic imaging report be included in the USCDI V1.
This is Adam. I would not recommend factoring in those emerging and candidate classes that were in that initial draft of the USCDI from a year ago, January, as written in stone, as far as the expected delivery of those as potential USCDI elements.
Well, I think we're not taking that as written in stone. We're sort of making a recommendation, which is that we think diagnostic imaging reports is actually ready for consideration.
Okay.
And there's a better data.
Others in the work group would want to discuss that further.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. And again,
I think
OMC
it would be better
is,
to work on that than imaging narrative as notes.
Yeah. Right. And again, ONC can ignore this. They don't like it.
Well, they have okay. to address all of the comments they get.
Yeah, no,
they
I know.
Can
they can
disagree
can just say,
with them.
Yeah. All right, we disagree. Thank you. Next.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so they don't have to write a long note. Okay, so continuity of care documents. Clem says it's not widely used, but it actually was the meaningful use workhorse, if I recall. Everybody sent continuity of care documents because you could check all the meaningful use boxes. I expect that people do that.
So I agree they're well adopted as a CCA template, but are they really like a note? What is the concept of, part of what I was puzzled with here is when we say we want to adopt these, are we saying we want the CCDA template to be adopted and supported within the EHR, or are we somehow using the CCDA template names to refer to different types of notes?
Yeah, good question. It obviously came off the list of CCDA templates.
Right. If we're really saying we want to propose the adoption of a whole bunch of additional CCDA templates, I guess to me that merits further consideration because each of those represents, you know, a development effort, and I don't know that all of them are of the same priority. If we're saying we just want to adopt additional note types and use that list of note types or that list as an inspiration of what types of standardized notes are there, then I would say a continuity of care document does not make sense to me as a note type.
And I was confused because I wasn't sure what CCDA, what would a CCDA provide that wouldn't already be listed here as a note or other element?
Yeah, the CCDA templates actually provide an outline for the content, which I guess as I think about it more is my objection to these notes not being included. Because the current, and this may not be fair, the current systems, workflows, don't adequately provide the information needed. So maybe a circular reasoning there, but okay. So there were, so maybe on this whole area, there were a couple of notes, note types that are particularly important for non-medical providers, like the transfer summary note, and that one in particular, and then in general, the advanced care plan I don't know why that's duplicate. Anyway.
When we say this is just for context, so again, thinking about these in USCDI, that means they go into a certification requirement. Does every software product then have to support all of USCDI? And then does that mean that you have to support just the receipt of these things or both the generation? If you think of an operative note, a surgical system would want to support the generation of an operative note. Family practice ambulatory care system would just want to be able to support the reading of an operative note, but wouldn't be intended for the generation of an operative note in that EHR. That sort of is like a level that I feel like was not contemplated by these recommendations, but would be important before they're all translated into certification requirements.
Yeah, I think we're going to tackle that one in phase two, sort of the advancement process. Because one of the first questions I have on my list is exactly that. You know,
okay.
Do patients apply to everyone, or are they sort of role specific? You know,
so then
if you generate, you support it. If you don't, you don't.
What does that mean for like 17?
17, an operative. Yeah, it would be exactly what you said. Ambulatory care practice will need to read it, but not generate it.
I'm just worried that it's not clear that would be how this would be interpreted by ONC when they go to write certification requirements, and that they would decide that to support USCDI, everyone has to be able to support generating an operative note.
Yeah. Again, I think that comes in phase two. I think that's what our recommendations would be. So I can't anticipate what we're going to come up with, but my recommendation would be that it's really role specific, and that it's not a global certification requirement. It is specific to what you do. And if you don't do it, you don't have to support it. Okay, so I think, unfortunately, we're at the end of the hour. But this is really helpful. Thank you guys so much.
Do you have any follow-up homework for us, Terry? Do we need to put in further comments or respond via email?
Yeah, well, there, you know, what we'll do, we'll send this folder, this file out
okay.
to everybody. And if you want to, you know, make comments in the adjudication or adjudication comment columns, that would be great. I'm going to take these comments and go back to our transmittal letter and fold them in. But that would be hugely helpful. So we're going to probably have one more round. Hopefully we get the transmittal letter out this weekend and give people a day or two to comment on it, because we have to get it out on Wednesday. So, I mean, probably, you know, Tuesday noontime is going to be the close of comments. But this is really hugely helpful. I think we made great progress. And anyone who wasn't on the call, you know, they had their chance. Anyway, so thank you. And so Adam or Johnny or Stacy, could we get this, a copy of this document out to
yep.
everyone on the task force with the request that they review the adjudications and to comment on ones we haven't gotten to. If they've got something other than the comment they already made.
Sure, we can get that out after this call.
Great. Sounds good. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.